The big question is this: how does a beauty professional who is amazing at their service actually charge what they're worth and avoid attracting clients that are a pain in the butt? How do they become the go-to expert in their space and get their creativity and ideas shared with others so they can build their following without being stuck behind the chair or in their salon?
Those are the questions, and this podcast has the answers.
My name is Jordan.
And I'm Katie, and welcome to the Real Beauty Bosses podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Real Beauty Bosses. Today, I'm going to be talking with Alina Ross, and she's going to be talking about how to train new assistants and employees so you can build your team the right way. Ellie is an incredible individual. She's from originally from Russia, so she's going to tell you about her backstory and how she actually moved now to where she is in Canada and built an extremely successful permanent makeup business by the name of Studio Ellie Ross in just 3 years' time. She has some incredible tips and, kind of success stories to share with you guys that I think you could definitely benefit from. So stay tuned and let's hear what Alina has to say about her awesome journey.
Welcome to Real Beauty Bosses. I have Ellie Ross today, and she's going to be sharing a little bit about some of what she's been able to do to be successful in her business. She's been in the beauty industry about 4 years, and you've been doing microblading for about 3 years, and that's kind of where you've settled and kind of really specialized in your expertise, right, is microblading, correct?
Yes.
Awesome.
I became passionate about
brow. Awesome. I love that. And I see you've been extremely successful. So I'd love to talk about kind of what you've been through in like 3 years is sounds like a long time, but it's really not to get to where the point you're at right now. So I'd love to hear how kind of you were able to really expedite the process to kind of get to where you're very well functioning. You have a strong team. You got some, you're able to kind of get away from the business and it's still run on its own. And I think that's something that a lot of people are looking to do or could benefit from. And so super excited to introduce you today and kind of get to know you and your story. And so give us a little background on how you got into microblading and maybe even how you got to, you're in Canada now, but you're not from there. How about you tell us kind of your backstory of how you got to where you're at right now?
So initially we moved to Canada in 1994 to Montreal. And of course, obviously, I'm an immigrant. And then we stayed here. We went between Montreal and Toronto, and then I settled finally in Montreal. Now I have my beautiful family here. I have my business. It's my home. I've always kind of been, I don't know if how many Russian women you know, but Russian women were very, appearance is aesthetics. We've always been taught our makeup and how important it is to look presentable. So I actually did personal training. So I've always kind of been in this kind of superficial, if you will, environment. So I did personal training for a little while.
I did as well. That's funny.
Yes, that was before child. Mm-hmm. Then I was a rep on the road,
mm-hmm.
online here local.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the restaurant industry for a really, really long time. And then I settled in aesthetics, and I'm very lucky that I have a natural kind of gift towards it, and I took to it very thoroughly, easily. I had to learn, of course, a few things, but it came naturally to me. Mm-hmm. And one day I went to get microblading done, and I was really frustrated that I couldn't explain to the girl, like the girl wasn't getting what I wanted to do with my brow, right? So finally I said, "What did you do the training?" She told me where. And when I started practicing and working on my latex and everything, I became very almost obsessed with it, like hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. That's why I think I moved so fast in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think hyper-focus is very important if you want to grow.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. What do you think, or tell us a little bit, like how'd you get trained and how'd you like first realize that microblading was something that you enjoyed and wanted to do? You said it was a friend of yours kind of introduced you to it, or
the thing with microblading is that it's very, when I had started, it was very difficult to get information. Everybody was very hush hush about it because the information is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Every training is about $3,000-$4,000, and they're very short trainings. They're about 2-3 days, mm-hmm. right? The longest training you'll get is about 5 to 7 days. So there's no college, there's no school. You really have to go get the information yourself, and you have to invest a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
So the first training I did was mediocre. Mm. Then I followed with a much better training. And whenever I would have an artist, whenever somebody would come from out of town, from Europe or the States in the Canada area, I would make sure to travel to go see them to maximize my knowledge.
Yeah.
invest in yourself is a big, big thing. That's especially with the first income you make, reinvest it back in. You go learn something new, you invest back into yourself.
Right. You got to get that strong foundation, right? And I think that all comes initially from personal development, right? And also, you know, the training that it takes to actually, you know the skills that you can use to kind of build, you know, the business that you want to create, right? And so tell us a little bit, maybe like, where did you get your training from? It was from a program locally in your area, or how did you kind of first get introduced to the training?
So all the microblading trainings that I'm aware of, it's all private. There's no really programs. Mm-hmm. You will have companies that will offer trainings, mm-hmm. and then you have trainings from different artists. Like myself, I offer trainings, right? Mm-hmm. When it's from a different artist, it's really interesting because they'll take a little bit of what they know from every single different company that they're trained, and they'll put it together into useful information. If you go train with a company, the company, you have to remember, it's a business. They want to pitch and sell what they're making.
Yes.
Will have a very one-sided kind of point of view. You mm-hmm. know, they won't tell you about their competitors. They won't tell you about what other products do. So it's interesting. It's really nice once you've chosen the company that you work with mm-hmm. to have a training with them. But I think the initial training has to come from an independent artist.
Yeah.
That has tried all these pigments and all these different products. And they can tell you, you know, this heals this way and this heals that way.
Someone who's already been doing or has done what you want to do, right?
Absolutely. Because the first company I was working with, the person that had trained me, she was a rep for that company. So she only trained me with those products. They all changed color.
Yeah.
Which is horrible.
Yeah.
Patient.
Yeah.
It's bad for your clients. It's bad for you. It's bad for business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to, it's very important that you choose your teacher right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's super important to note as well, because I think, like, I don't know, a lot of the brands and reps and things like that, like, sometimes it's just like in our school systems too, you know, a lot of people who are training and educating you, like, necessarily haven't really been, like, in the situation to really, like, grow maybe, you know, a successful business and test out different things. They've kind of just kind of got on that conveyor belt and learned from that one, you know, product line or that one brand, and they don't really have, you know, the experience of experimenting with different things. And so do you feel like you were trained by kind of an individual then? Is that correct?
Yes. So my first training was with an individual. My second training was a woman that represented a company. Mm-hmm. So color, basically. Mm-hmm. And the products. Then I did another training with a woman that used a lot of different products. They didn't have one particular product that she liked. Mm-hmm. And also now it's a lot more available than it was when I first started to get on online groups. Now you can, you know, go on Facebook, go into a group and ask, like, what do you guys think about this pigment?
Yeah.
And people are going to give you an answer. When I started, people were starving for information. Like, mm-hmm. we couldn't, when I started microblading, when I would YouTube microblading, there was 2 videos available.
Yeah. You probably go right now, there's hundreds, thousands probably. Yeah. That's the thing. That's like, that's why, like, you know, it's kind of crazy, like, how easy it is to get access to information now, but a lot of people just don't do it, you know? Like, you could literally probably, you know, learn how to model someone who's extremely successful just by, you know, popping in like those groups, like you just talked about, literally going on YouTube and searching microblading. You know, that's not the way it was, you know, maybe a couple years ago. Whereas now, like, there's just so much content out there that, like, you obviously it takes a little time to find, and you want to make sure you're learning and watching the right types of content. But, like, you know, there's so much information out there that you can kind of learn how to model success. And I think that's, like, what, from what it sounds like, from the first time we talked, has been, like, your real, you know, driving factor to you to be so successful and grow your business so quickly is, you know, you've modeled success, you've stayed, you know, setting goals for yourself. You know, I've looked at all your content. You're providing value for other people and kind of sharing your journey along the way too. And tell us a little bit, maybe bringing it back a little bit. So you're not from Canada. Tell us kind of maybe how you got over here and why you actually pursued into the beauty industry in the first place.
We were looking for the American dream, except they didn't tell us we're not in the States, we're in Canada.
Yeah. And where'd you say you're from? Just so everyone else knows.
Siberia, Russia. I was born in Siberia, Russia.
And so you moved to Canada how long ago?
In 1994. I was 9, so okay. You can count how old I am.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. That's super. And so tell us a little bit, like, when did you kind of first get introduced to the beauty industry in the first place? Was it, were you fairly young? Was it kind of something that you just sparked your interest and wanted to do? What really
my
for you?
It's us, I'm Russian, it's cultural. We were introduced to it since we're very little.
Yeah.
And it's for the North American culture, it's very, very different. For, you know, it's you don't tell little girls to wear makeup, they have to love themselves the way they are. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you guys in North America, you view things a bit differently. Us, it's more empowering. It's empowering to wear makeup. It's empowering to do treatments. Mm-hmm. For here, sometimes it's seen a bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Here, sometimes they see aesthetics as fake, as you don't love yourself the way you are. So yeah. My perception, I have that mix of growing up here and not being born here. Mm-hmm. So I'm good at that middle.
Yeah.
I was first introduced is my grandmother telling me I don't take out the garbage without wearing lipstick.
That's great.
And I said, why? She's like, well, you can bump into somebody and then you're going outside and you're leaving the house. You have to look your best. Mm-hmm. Because back then you had to leave the house to take out the garbage, right?
Yeah.
You had to leave the actual house.
Yeah.
So it just kind of stayed in my head. I'm like, wow, the effort this woman puts into her appearance and the pride she takes in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it kind of stayed with me. This is where the love was born.
Yeah.
By taking out the garbage.
That's a funny story, actually. that's crazy. It's how did you come out here kind of on your own? Did your family come
here as well? We came here with my mother in 1994. My mother moved to Toronto. I left the house when I was around 17.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work right away.
Mm-hmm.
So also that is a big reason why my business grew so fast is because I have a tremendous amount of actually work experience. You know, I didn't go to school very much, but I have been working full-time since about the age of 15, I would say.
Where were you working, if you don't mind me asking?
So back in my day when I was 15,
mm-hmm.
14. So the only way as a young person who's underage you could really make money, because I was about to move out on my own and I
it's not easy to do.
So my first job was telemarketing. So I acquired a lot of sales skills there.
There you go.
Then at the age of 17 I went to work in the restaurant industry. I worked as a hostess, I worked as a waitress, I worked as a barmaid. So I observed people a lot there too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of brought it all together, my knowledge and my passion together, and then here I am.
Awesome. So you said you got introduced by a close friend of yours into microblading, or was it, how did that all originate?
She's a friend of mine today, but that's how I met her.
Okay. Awesome. Did you just kind of reached out and said like, that looks interesting. How can I learn more? Or how did that kind of first spark?
Social media. I saw a friend of mine who had it done on social media on Instagram. Which social media is huge. I mean, if you're not on social media and you think you're going to be successful, you can just forget it.
Yeah.
Abandon ship right there. It's like abort mission. It's not happening. If you don't have social media, if you don't have strong social media, So she's a friend of mine today, but back then a girl that I knew posted on social media that she had the treatment done. Mm-hmm. And then I went and then I had asked her where she got the training. And then I followed up with the training and then proceeded with other techniques.
Awesome. Super. And so you said that happened about 3 years ago, right? When you first got introduced to microblading and then you got trained and what was really, you know, talk us maybe through that like first year. Of how you got your business off the ground. Were you leveraging social media then as much as you are now? Or what do you feel is a driving factor for you?
Before I started microblading, because now I do microblading permanent makeup, full permanent makeup. If you start microblading, it will lead you to permanent makeup. It's just inevitable. you want to grow. So when I first started microblading, I didn't have social media. I didn't have Facebook and I didn't have Instagram. I had an old Facebook that I had closed because I wasn't working in the same industry anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was living a home life. I just had my daughter. I had nothing to share. And I'm very personal about my child and my home life. So I don't post that. So I didn't see a use in having social media. The first thing I did when I graduated and I started taking on clients is I cleaned up my whole Facebook, and I created a new Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Made it about work.
Mm-hmm.
So the first year I was hyper focused. Like I knew I need to perfect my technique. I needed to, before I could teach somebody and grow a team, I needed to be confident that I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Microblading is a treatment that takes a really long time to learn because you have different skin, you have different colors, you have different reactions, you have different pieces. It's so much. So it takes a good year to see healed results to know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
First year, I had just focused on perfecting my technique.
Awesome. Yep.
And building my social following.
Mm-hmm. And so you did that a lot through like your personal social media. You said like you cleaned up your personal Facebook and Instagram. Did you start like a business page at that point? Or like, was it all kind of just personal?
I didn't start a business page until a year after. So I converted my personal page into a business page. Mm-hmm. And but if you ever go on my social media, there is me a little bit and then work, and then a little bit me and then mostly work, because mostly what I do is work.
Yeah. Also. Yeah. And I love that about you. You got that pit bull mentality, right? I can see you work real hard. So
I work hard and I love what I do.
Awesome. So, and that's all about kind of, you know, that focus, right? I mean, like you're doing this, you know, for a reason, right? You kind of want to build a business that, you know, expanding into product lines as well. You want to build, you know, a sustainable, you know, business for yourself rather than, you know, what I think a lot of people do is they move to the, you know, point where they're self-employed and they set up, you know, their booth or their, you know, their salon or whatever they want to do. And they kind of get to the point where they don't have like a plan or a next step or an exit strategy or anything. And they kind of get, you know, trapped in a box, right? And because they're working like crazy, right? And, you know, what I really wanted to focus on and talk about today is like how you've been able to kind of make sure that you've been, you know, throughout the past few years, it sounds like the first year you were just focused on getting really good at what you did, right? And that's where you have to start, right? You can't, you know, expand and grow if you're not good at what you do, right? And I love the fact that did you just focus on microblading at the point too? Or did you try a bunch of different services?
When I say I was hyper-focused, mm-hmm. you couldn't talk about anything else.
I love that. That's so important too.
It wasn't healthy. Let's put it that way. It wasn't healthy. Like I look at it today, and I think about the way I was, and I couldn't repeat it right now.
Yeah. Why do you think you had that kind of focus at that point? Was there something going on in your life that you had to make it work? Or what was really like the reasoning behind it?
I didn't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it? Okay, I understand.
I'll talk about it on a superficial level.
Okay.
So I just had my daughter,
mm-hmm.
and I was a new mom, and I had the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom,
mm-hmm.
and it's just not for me. And it's amazing for some people, but it wasn't for me. And I felt like I lost myself and I needed to regain. And I was very independent. All of a sudden I was dependent on my spouse, you know, and it scared the life out of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to build something that I can be a mom at the same time. I can have a business do all that. So basically,
That's awesome.
It was my escape from motherhood. Not from motherhood, my escape. Because I had this little baby and I was with the baby all day long. Yeah. So all of a sudden I could be with adults, I could be with people, I could be productive, you know? So I hyper-focused when I was there.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed that more than changing diapers.
Yeah. That's completely relatable too. I mean, like, you know, a lot of people or women think that, you know, I just want to be a stay-at-home mom, but, you know, like, you know, that's maybe the case for a lot of people, but you know, it feels like you wanted to, you know, be able to be there to provide too. You wanted to kind of, you know, focus and do good and get your, you know, get something going for yourself too, that was going to benefit, right? Because you felt like you were dependent, and that wasn't your mentality or the way that you were brought up, right? It was to be independent.
Being dependent for that little minute there really scared me. My partner wasn't being mean or anything. Everything was great. It's just that it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And for anybody who had a little baby, you lose yourself for a little bit, and it is what it is. Some people, I mean, for some people it's great. For me, it's just, it wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what really was the reason you just kind of locked in and focused and got things rocking and rolling, right?
Yeah, because I've always worked in a female dominant environment, and all of a sudden I was home with a baby. So when I would leave the house and I was interacting with my clients and I was working and I was being productive, I would enjoy it so much. Like, it was bringing me back to myself. Mm-hmm. So all I wanted to do was be at work, because then I would go home and I would have to change diapers and not sleep. And let's not get into breastfeeding, but it was a lot. Yeah. I wasn't like, thank you. Like, in my head, I thought I was going to be this mom who was just going to glow in the motherhood baby whole thing. And it wasn't the case.
Yeah. Well, I can really respect that. I mean, a lot of people will probably admire you for doing that, because it's not easy to do, you know, while you're raising a kid and start a business at the same time. That's incredible that you were able to do both. So I have a lot of respect for that. I mean, I know that's something a lot of people aren't willing to do either. You know, they get comfortable and they're okay being dependent, but you know, the fact that you still wanted to, you know, that inner drive to keep doing things that are going to also, you know, get you to where you want to be and also help, you know, the family situation as well. I love that. And that's awesome. That's definitely, like, I think the number one reason or thing that people should focus on before they start anything is the reason why they're doing what they're doing. And so, I love that you just shared that with me. I appreciate it. tell us a little bit, like, what's your schedule look like at that point in time? Like, how did you manage that? Because that's not easy to do.
If I saw a schedule like that now, I would have an anxiety attack before I started. It was something. And not only that, I had no help. I was doing everything myself. I was posting, replying, booking, confirming. Everything. I was doing everything myself. So let's say today my day is full. I have 5 clients in a day, and my day is full. I start at 9. Like, now I made my schedule so I can have the proper rest, because you need that white time, that calm time. If you're always working, you will never grow, because all you're gonna be working and you're gonna be exhausted.
100%.
So I would take at 8:30 a.m. I believe my first client until 8-9, depending on when I would finish. I would do about 12 people in a day. Mm-hmm. 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. 3 clients. 3 days a week, 12. Yeah. That would be that. And my little baby at home.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, do you think that first year that you really, like, put your head down and really, like, focused, do you think that's maybe one of the main reasons you're able to be so successful where you're at now?
Yeah, and it's also why I give so much shit to my staff when they can't do something.
Yeah, like, I'll do it myself, right? You know? Yeah.
You can literally really replace anybody. It's also very important to know everything and everybody, what they're doing, and to be able to do it yourself. Tomorrow gets up, I can sit down and I can do it. Mm-hmm. I can book, I can confirm, I can send out email. I know everything. If tomorrow my social media agency drops me, I can do it on my own. Yeah. If my technician decides she quits tomorrow and she leaves, I can take on her clients. It's not a problem. Mm-hmm. That's also why a lot of the services that I have here, I have to make sure that I know how to do them myself.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So, like, I would never, you know, and I've always done this in my business, and you know, me and me and my girlfriend, Katie, we've been together about 4 years. Like, you know, we've never like brought anyone on board that we didn't know how to do what we were teaching people how to do first. Cause I think like a lot of people just will want to outsource things and like, you know, I'll just hire an assistant. And, you know, maybe they didn't even learn like how they wanted to, you know, use an assistant first. And like, I think that's super important that you have to like know how to do what you want to outsource and train. Right. So how did you kind of, what was the first step that you realized, hey, I need some help? Like it was all on your own at first, right? At what, was it the first year, the second year that you started actually, you know, getting some people on board with you?
So it was when I started having two phones and I would answer them at dinner time. Yes. And it became a problem at home.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's because my partner pushed me a bit because he was taking up so much of my time and I was so into it. So it was nothing more important than what was happening at work, you know? Mm-hmm. So I ended up with two phones. That's and one for work, one for emails and work. And I was answering all the time and answering emails all the time and answering mm-hmm. clients all the time. And it became a bit overwhelming for my home life. It became unbalanced. Mm-hmm. So I said, I need to hire somebody to help me with that. Initially, I had hired a friend. I had a girl, a friend of mine who went on mat leave. Mm-hmm. She was about to have a baby. And I said, do you want to make a little bit of money on the side? You can work from home. Mm-hmm. So she was helping me. She organized everything for me. She would organize my schedule. And then she told me it got overwhelming for her. Mm-hmm. So I realized I have to hire an actual assistant, an actual receptionist.
Yeah. You don't realize like how big of a role that is and like how much time that takes out of you. And especially like, you know, we talked about this, especially like, you know, you've got to be focused to be able to grow like on one thing. And if you have to, you know, deal with clients and then go respond to a bunch of emails and do a bunch of scheduling and, you know, come back over here, like it's impossible to really like be able to grow and expand from there. So like, how did you find the right person to first bring on? To be that assistant for you? And how did you train them? Because I think that's something that a lot of people could benefit from too, is like, you know, I'm maybe at a stage in my business where I've got a bunch of clients now. I'm very good at what I do. Maybe I'm even doing microblading and like, you know, I have kind of built a little bit of a social presence. I'm getting a lot of clients. Like, what's my next step? Like to get a little bit of help with all the admin and the scheduling and things like that. How did you kind of discover that? And how did you train that person?
So, again, it's very important that they're trainable.
Yeah.
You hire a person who's wonderfully qualified and has a lot of experience, but they're set in their ways and they don't want to adapt to you. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
They have to represent you. And also the people that you will most likely train in the beginning will not be the people that will do the full, often, not all the time, but often will not be the people that will do the full path with you. Mm-hmm. Because they have to adapt constantly to the change, and it's very difficult for people to change. Mm-hmm. So it's important for them to shadow you. Mm-hmm. They have to be with you all the time.
Yep.
The way I trained this person is I put her in the same room as me, mm-hmm. and I could hear her speak on the phone and reply to clients. So I would correct her every time she would hang up. This is how mm-hmm. you reply. This is how you speak. This is the tone you use. This is how you say goodbye. You smile when you, because you can hear people smiling over the phone.
Yeah.
You have to smile because your tone changes and the person on the other line knows. So having done telemarketing,
That's what I was about to say. you learned that in telemarketing.
You know, I had a lot of those skills already in place. Mm-hmm. So I trained her really well. She was young. She was great at the time, for the time. And that's it. Just make sure you listen to the way they speak, body language when they're dealing with the client. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, when you get your first employee, you will feel like, I didn't have that confidence. You know, I felt like I had to be careful. What if she leaves me? What if she's not happy? What if, you know what I mean? I had that fear. I wanted to be a friend. I didn't want her to dislike me. And it's not the right way to do things, but whether you want to or not, you'll start that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that you kind of, like, when you first get started, I think it's super important that you do have someone, like, shadow you, like, this is how I do what I do, and, like, you know, kind of get them started with it as soon as possible so that they can kind of get their feet wet and actually, you know, that's the best way people are going to learn when you're training people is if, like, you actually put them in there and do it and then just correct as you go, right? Sometimes I think people try to over-prepare and, you know, say that, you know, well, I'm not ready to hire anyone out. Like, I don't know how to train anybody. I've never done it before. You know, it holds people back.
It's hard because you're giving up control.
Mm-hmm. It's so difficult. Yeah, I can completely relate. I remember when we first started hiring on a few people, we built, like we were just in college and we were super young. I'd never trained anyone before. I'd worked a bunch of jobs and I, you know, learned a lot in that experience of doing that. But like I had never run a business before. I'd never, you know, hired anyone or trained anyone. I was 21 years old when I hired my first employee. And it was like, it was crazy to me because I had to kind of, you know, I did a lot of research, figured out like what, you know, systems could I use to make it this easier? Like, you know, how do I make sure that, you know, things don't fall apart when I try to get someone to help me out? And I remember the biggest, you know, thing that really was like an aha moment for me at that point when I was training was like, I was trying to train while being like, so like, you know, I don't know. At first, I guess you have to kind of be like really, you know, on top of things and make sure everything's running smooth. But I was, I just didn't want anything to go wrong. Right. And I didn't want to lose, you know, the control and have, you know, things fall back on me if something didn't go right or wrong. Right. And, I think the biggest thing that really allowed it to, you know, be successful for me was, literally just documenting everything I do and, you know, having them kind of see it in action and kind of be able to, you know, learn from that way. And then just like jumping into it, you know, and let them go. But obviously monitor them while they're doing it. Cause you know, so no one's going to hop in on board when you have, exactly.
And you give them tools and then as time goes on, you correct and adjust.
Yeah, absolutely. So how, so you hired your first assistant, right? How did you, and tell us how many kind of people you have working in the operation now? A couple years later.
So the thing that you want when you first start having a little bit of employees is you want to be big, you want to go big, you know, that's your first idea, that's your first idea, like, I can go big. But people don't understand the concept of big. More people big doesn't mean more staff, you know. Big sometimes doesn't even mean a bigger location. You can rotate your rooms. You can make more money out of less rooms that have more rent to pay with more rooms and they're empty. So now we have myself, three other technicians. I have another technicians, for, another technician for eyelashes and two reception. So I brought down the number of receptionists I had and I brought down the number of technicians I had. So word of advice, better have two full-time than two part-time, one full-time.
The more people
work, the more dedicated they are.
I love that. And the people, you know, don't necessarily cost you money if, you know, you have the right roles for them. Like it's going to help you grow and expand. Like, but like you told me too, like it's important to keep it small and tight, right? You know, don't, try to, you know, hire a ton of people to be able to grow when maybe you just need, you know, one or two assistants and, you know, maybe just slowly start to build, right? Because then you'll kind of get in the groove of finding out what works and what doesn't work, right?
Yeah, because then information gets lost. You can't imagine the time that it takes you to train a person properly, and imagine you have 10 like that. You're going to lose it somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere the quality of service is going to be lost. Somewhere communication is going to be lost. So the tighter you keep it, the more productive you'll be. If you have as many possible as possible, so it's better to have one full-time person. But one, I don't believe is if you can replace them yourself. Must have one. I always have at least two because if something goes wrong with one, I have the other.
Okay, awesome. I know you got to wrap things up here. You got another client here coming up soon. What's just I think a lot of people would benefit this from if you don't mind sharing. Like, what is do you kind of have a training procedure that you use with people that you bring on board, or is it kind of just like what's kind of the process? Like, if I wanted to be an assistant. Like how would you kind of work with me and how long would that process take to actually get me going?
Important. Keep designated tasks to the designated person. So I used to take a receptionist. I would train them in microblading sometimes because I was missing there. So I would use the same person for different things. Keep receptionist, keep a technician, you know, so tasks are clear. What each person's responsibility is. In terms of technicians, usually I'll bring in two models. I'll bring in a model that I will work on myself, and then I will let them work on the other model. I can learn a lot from them too, because they're coming from a different background than me.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I'll adjust my technique to the new information they have, but overall it has to be a similar, it has to have the same feel. You know what I mean? Because people are coming for a certain look, for a certain service, for something particular. However, it doesn't take away from their because it's artistic, right? Everybody has their different touch. Sometimes I designate certain clients to certain technicians because I know they have more experience with that. Somebody has a little bit more experience with mature skin. Somebody has a little bit more experience with darker skin. You know, so I'll designate people to that. But train them until, I mean, shadow, have them shadow you until you feel you're confident. Like I said, some people are not trainable. Some people are stuck in their ways and it just doesn't work. But you will know when they're ready to go. Usually I give it 3 days. Three full working days.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. Awesome. Do you kind of have procedures set in place too for the training? Or like as far as like, you know, anything that, do you do a lot hands-on? Or is there anything that you kind of use as resources so they can...
Hands-on.
Okay.
Awesome. They have to go through me. They have to go through me. They have to shadow me. They have to see the way I speak. And like I said, the technique, drawing, with practice, it comes.
Yeah.
If you do repetitive moments, some people will take a month, some people will take a year, but every person will get it.
Yeah.
A lot of what they have to learn is the way I am with people and how I make people feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that too. You said you're very motherly in the way that you treat, you know, your team and your clients, and I feel like that's definitely a factor into why you've been able to be so successful. As we're wrapping things up here, I don't want to cut into your time to get to your next client. So really quick, last thing as we wrap things up here, maybe what's maybe one key tip that you could provide. For anyone who may be watching, who's looking to, you know, start to build an actual business rather than just working for themselves, being self-employed, what do you feel like is the number one thing that you wish you would have known as you were kind of growing and expanding into what you are today?
What is business? Business works for you. You don't work for the business.
Mm-hmm.
It means if something happens to you, it's still rolling. Then you have a business going. Don't be a slave to your business.
Yeah.
If you are not present and the business is not functioning, it's not a business. It's a job. It's a business 100%. In the sense of corporate. But your business has to work for you. Don't be a slave to your business, because then it defeats the whole purpose. And with time, it takes away joy from your work.
Yeah. I don't think you could have said any better. I can personally relate. I love that.
Absolutely.
As we wrap things up, tell us maybe... Where people can find you, and kind of also like what you're working on with your products right now. Cause I was very interested to kind of hear like what kind of your plan is right now.
So right now I'm working on a makeup line, a long wear makeup line.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the works. It should be out by next fall. It's going to be INA Cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on social media. My studio is studio_ Ellie Ross. We say Ellie, you guys say Eli in this case.
Yeah.
Elina, Elina. Ellie. And my personal is Ellie.Ross. So you can find me on my personal. Right now I'm working on a product line just for evolution and growth. And I feel like I've kind of conquered my field in my area. So I want to always grow and evolve, and I want to stay stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on my product line, which is quite a big challenge.
Yeah, I'd love to hear, like, let's stay in touch. I want to hear how, you know, that's going for you. And you said launching this fall or?
Next fall. Year.
Okay. Awesome.
In a year.
Well, let's stay in touch. I'd love to kind of hear how things are going, because I think that's a step that a lot of people want to take, but maybe they're not sure how to get there or that it's even possible. So like, I'd love to kind of, you know, keep in touch with you, make sure things are running smooth, and, you know, anything that we can do to help as well, I'd love to do so. I think a lot of people could learn a lot from your story and how you've been able to be so successful in just 3 years. You already launched your own product line. That's incredible. That's awesome. And so go find Ellie at Studio Ellie Ross, right? That's you on Instagram and Facebook, and keep up with her. Make sure everything's running smooth. I'd love to kind of keep up and see how things are going and see where you end up. I'm super excited to see where you can take everything that you've been working on. You work hard. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let's stay in touch and we'll talk soon. Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
I'll talk to you later.